Let's get this phenomenal attainment of a meeting into session.
Woohoo!
I'm so sorry for not making an episode last week. Just, the script is really long because I wanted to fit a lot into this episode, and I also wanted to make sure that's the best I can do. Alright, one and all, welcome to episode 100 of the podcast. To make things special for this momentous occasion, I will play the first episode of the podcast again, and then introduce myself once more. Let's get this club meeting into session. See what I did there? So I will be going over what this podcast will be about. This is pretty much an audio version of an everyday school club. I will be talking about new books coming out soon, writing techniques, and maybe even write a drama if there's anything good. Hopefully I will even be able to get a few guests on here. You don't have to be famous or have a large following. You can just come on here and talk about your experiences as a writer or even what projects you're currently working on. I also plan on doing an impersonation series where I'll pick a character from a book or write one up, and I'll impersonate them. For someone wondering as to why I created this podcast, it is because my school doesn't have a creative writing club, and nobody I know is interested in joining if I were to create one. So I've decided to create an online writing club. Besides, I have much further reach if it were to be online anyways. As for anyone wondering who I am, my name is Portia Aubrey. I'm 15 years old and I am a self-published writer. Well, soon to be. My first book, Death Chill, is currently still being on the works. I'll be selling it on Amazon as Kindle and paperback. I am Canadian and I've never traveled outside of Ontario and Quebec. Even though I have never really gone anywhere, my imagination is strong enough for me to think of places that I've never even heard of. I've even managed to make it so strong that I can physically see things I'm imagining to be right in front of me. I can think of beautiful floating islands, magical beasts with teeth longer than their entire body, and even entirely new planets. Since it's the first episode, I don't have very much to talk about that doesn't involve me bragging about my amazing imagination. So I'll have to get to work on ending this thing in the most professional way possible. Next episode, I'll be talking about publishing companies that are known for scamming people, and touch a little into my experiences with these companies. Be sure to check out my Instagram, @dark_night_wolves. I have a picture of a dog on it, with the name Anne Aubrey. And with that, this first club meeting has come to an end. And remember to stay in school.
Alright, now it's my turn. My name is Portia Anne Aubrey. I'm a 17-year-old girl living in Ontario, Canada. Ottawa, to be more precise. Though I've only been living in Ottawa since I was 13. Before that, I had moved around a lot with my family due to financial troubles, and we had often lived in the middle of nowhere. For a few people who may not know what I mean, the middle of nowhere in this instance is an area far away from any towns or cities, and is often surrounded by trees with few neighbors, if there are any at all. A majority of my neighbors were elderly people that owned and worked on farms, and I even had the opportunity of working for them a few times, but I digress. I am a published author of 3 novels, them being called Death Chill, Flame Rip, and Arctic Blaze. I also have a 4th ready to publish, which is called Shrouded Personas, and is the first book in an 8-book dark fantasy series. I'm a dark fantasy author. I also suffer from paranoia, panic attacks, social anxiety, and persistent depressive disorder. All diagnosed, of course. I may also possibly have borderline personality disorder and autism. However, those are not fully diagnosed, and I have been told that it's likely that I have them, but it's not certain just yet. And since I am medicated, I can't really be diagnosed with anything new anymore, since the meds affect my mood. I've been running the podcast Creative Writing Club ever since early August 2020, back before I started 10th grade. I'm now in 12th grade and am about to graduate in a few months, if I can manage to keep my grades up, with my depression still tearing me down, of course. Before I was medicated, I used to have frequent hallucinations that were created by my depression and anxiety, and I've had them ever since I was a child, younger than 4 years old even, though I started remembering things at 4 years old. But now that I'm medicated, I don't see them as often. But when I first started to be medicated, they went away entirely for a month. But then my body got used to the medications and they started to come back. So I'm going to have to speak with my doctors about that. But anyway, podcast. So I have a few things written down in terms of the agenda for this episode that we will go through. I just have to pull it up real quick because I forgot I wrote this portion down. Alright, read some poetry that I had written, languages that I've created. I'm pretty sure I decided to take that portion out. Goals for the podcast, books I'd recommend reading, plans for the podcast. Took that out. Goals aside from writing in the podcast that I have, a look into my mental health journey. Took that out. Read chapter 11 of Death Chill, read chapter 1 of Flame Rip, and read chapter 1 of Arctic Blaze. Read some short stories I had written, plans for my future compared to earlier years, my homemade hot chocolate recipe, actually I had taken that one out, that's right, a guitar clip my boyfriend had made, and let's see, how to come on to the podcast, shout out my portfolio, of course, and like we just did, review the first episode I had made. Alright, so starting off the first part of the list, poetry. Quick trigger warning, these poems will feature topics of abuse, suicide, and self-harm. So if you can't stand hearing about those sorts of subjects, then feel free to skip ahead or click off. You are by no means required to listen to any of these poems. I'll make sure to finish off with a less harmful poem at the end of the poems, so that no one will have to risk listening to pain when they don't want to. Alright, so I have the first poem loaded up and everything. Pencil just scared me. So the first one is called Cutting. Once again, trigger warning. Emotions become too much. The pain, the anxiety, the depression. It's too much. The last thing I need is a broken heart. But I fuck up and shatter my soul nonetheless. The physical pain is nice. For a few minutes I can shut my brain and slice my skin. Cut 1, release. Cut 2, relax. Cut 3, escape. Cut 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, freedom. Slice, cut, scar, pour. Pour out every drop of blood till I'm numb. Numb from the pain and smile. I fucked up. I know I did. But there is no other way to breathe. These thoughts and emotions clog my lungs. I can't breathe. So I cut holes to let the oxygen escape. I cut high to conceal my self-hatred. But when it comes to emotions, I'll leave to share my experience. To show others they're not alone. Because they're not. But I am. I'm always alone. I'll die alone. Alone while the cuts finally release me. I did give you a trigger warning. Alright, next one is called Borderline Personality Disorder. It's possible I have it, the mental disability that's seen as the hardest, most gruesome. If I fit the criteria perfectly, each symptom matching my existence. Fear of abandonment? Check. Unstable relationships? Check. Unclear, shifting self-image? Check. I already matched with 3 out of 9. How much worse can I get? Impulsive self-destructive behaviors? Check. Self-harm? Check. Extreme emotional swings? Check. 6 out of 9. I'm already at a passing grade. Surely it can't get worse. After all, I've made it this far. Chronic feelings of emptiness? Check. Explosive anger? Check. Feeling suspicious or out of touch with reality? Check. 9 out of 9. That's 100%. An A+. I want to live and become an amazing mother. I want to write, cook, podcast, and support my loved ones. But I want to die. I want to slice my throat. Overdose, free fall, drown. I have no control over my emotions. I have no control over anything. I want to die. But I have no control over that either. I want to feel love again. I want to live, but I want to fucking die. I'm pretty sure the paper just touched the microphone. I'm so sorry for audio listeners, which is everyone, because this is a podcast. Let's see, next one. Unrequited love. I know you love me. I know it. You've told me hundreds of times already. But no matter what, no matter how much you practically shouted at me, I still feel as though it's much less than mine. My love for you outweighs my self-hatred. Hatred that suffocates me, but you remind me to breathe. You try to help me get better, but it's no use. I'm getting worse by the day. I'll probably end up dead soon. I'll lose control again. And next time I won't be crying, not the neck. I won't fight it as the blade pierces my throat. My brain will end up becoming foggy, and I won't be able to think of you. You'll get over my death quick. I know you will. Everyone will. But if our love for each other will die, I'm not too sure. Because you've made a home in my heart, and I, a dwelling in your conscience. I love you, and you love me. But it'll never be requited love, because I'm difficult, and you're amazing, and you deserve millions of times better than me. I forgot the word for it at the last second. Plot twist, he's my boyfriend now. Ooh, Burning World. Let's see. Let's do two more, then go on to the positive one. Burning World. I ruin everything. I want to die. I seep out every bit of joy you have. I take all of the fun out of everything. You try to make me happy. But you don't know how much pain I'm in. You try to understand me. You don't know you'll end up fucked too. My insides feel like they're on fire. But even with all these tears, the flames will not extinguish. Simultaneously, I'm burning and frozen. Sick to my stomach. Cries turning to screeching. I can't breathe. I've gone a day without cutting, but now all I can think about is the blade. That is screaming all around me. Echoing in these metal halls. It hurts my ears. Gives me flashbacks. I want to escape. My memories turn to smoke, and yet they still grip at my throat. I'll even try to hold a torch up to them, but that just reveals them more. Each positive turned to negative. Each fake smile and private cry. I can't escape them. My world is on fire, and I'm going up in flames. And now for one last negative one. Well, largely negative one. It's called questioning. I'm finally feeling a bit better now. I've gone 2 days without cutting, and only had one or two dark thoughts today. But then that makes me question. Do I really have BPD? Maybe I've just been having an emotional few months. Maybe I was being more dramatic because I was told I might have it. Maybe I was fine this whole time and just wanted attention. I'm starting to question if I even like writing anymore. I haven't had the interest to work on my novel in forever. I haven't had the interest to read. Who am I without my writing then? Who am I? I can't pursue STEM. I'm shit at science. I can't sing either. I've stopped playing instruments years ago. I've never been a fan of acting, unless it was to show off and get a good grade. Who am I anymore? I don't recognize myself. The bags under my eyes are growing every day, I guess. Keeping busy with work helps distract myself. Is that why I started writing? One of the BPD symptoms is questioning reality. But I don't know anymore. It's all a paradox. If I question, then it's a yes. But if I have all the other symptoms, then it's also a yes. I don't know who I am anymore. Who am I?
Alrighty. Now, let's pull up the more less negative one.
Destined to be used. With the prompt 6 poem called Destiny, which I submitted for a writing contest. The fire to my warmth, the water to my life, the air to my lungs, the earth to my home. What is it that I am to this world full of life and death, each having each other, each relying on each other, to share my mind through pages of paper and words, words that will inevitably be wasted. Wasted like my past friendships. Friendships where I have learned the importance of solitude. But will I always be alone? Alone like how I am every day. Every day being ignored or mocked for trying to do something with myself. Is it my destiny to just be used? Used like money. Money that I always end up wasting on people I don't even like. Like a lesson that I refuse to learn. For everybody is different. Different minds, different wants, different opinions. Opinions that can make or break. Break just like my spirit every time I hear that faint whisper. So what is my destiny? To write? To help? To be used? I hope you all enjoyed my poems, and hopefully they weren't too dark for everyone. I promise I'm getting help for my mental health, so I am alright. But next up are my goals for this amazing, steadily growing podcast. I want to do more collaborations. However, I'm also too busy to immediately record with people, and not to mention the possibility of me being called in. Though at my new job, the chances of me being called in are much lower, so that'll give me more certain availabilities, and won't risk me having to reschedule a meeting last minute. I'll be talking about how you can come onto the podcast later in the episode, so feel free to patiently wait and listen along until then. As for another goal, I want to be able to reach at least 3,000 followers on Spotify by the end of the year. For some reason, I wrote the end of the end, but anyway. As of writing this, we are at 199, so basically 200. I wholeheartedly believe that we can reach 300, or at least close to it. Especially if we manage to gain by 10 a month on average. We got this, guys. We just have to work towards it. Next on the list, books I'd recommend reading. For my writer's craft class, my teacher assigned us books to read based on grammar and the rules of writing. One of the books was Strunk and White, The Elements of Style. Granted, I only read to like page 7, then bullshitted my way through the tests, somehow getting close to 100 every single time. But I'd still recommend it. Since others had learned a lot from it. Another book I'd recommend is actually a series, and it's pretty amazing. It's called Death Chill, with the second and third book being called Flame Rip and Arctic Blaze. But anyway. Speaking of Strunk and White, there are also a few plans that I have for the podcast as well. One being a podcast website, though I doubt I'll be able to update it regularly. And another would be for me to teach and talk about the things I had learned in my writing class. I have a file of everything I'd been taught and will gladly spread the information out among multiple episodes. Just like the content that has been covered in this episode, they will also be spread out. Just listening to this episode will give you a sooner sneak peek into what I'll be talking about sometime in the future. So no worries. If you don't have a long enough attention span to listen to this entire episode, which I relate to, so no worries. No judgment. I legit can't watch movies or shows with episodes longer than 25 minutes. The information provided in this episode will be spread out onto its own. Next up, I will actually be reading some short stories I had written, which can be found on my writing portfolio that I will be including in the description of this episode. This one I had actually written for my writer's craft class summative. It was worth, I believe, 30% of my grade. Basically, it was a creative piece written of whatever we'd like with a maximum word count of 1,000, or I believe it was 15 poems for the people who were writing those. However, everyone went over the word count, except for people who wrote poems, of course. In fact, one of my classmates was close to 3,000 words. So safe to say, the teacher lost a lot of free time due to us going above and beyond. But hey, he allowed it. It is a dark fantasy piece, and frankly, I'm quite happy with it. I'm sure there are some areas that I could improve on, but nonetheless, I'm just going to read the works I had submitted. Particles. Yellow tape branches off into the darkness. Signs marked with beware, turn around, and danger. Riddle the overgrown land of sharp grass and bushy trees. It wasn't long ago that my mother and I were walking through this area with the dogs, admiring the well-kept greenery and laughing as the children of the town would chase butterflies or get preoccupied with birds. It was less than a week ago when everything changed. Oi! The deep voice of one of my classmates echoed through the mucky wind. Marco, shut up! My other classmate smacks him. The sound makes me wince. I turn around to find them both standing just next to the tape, staring at me expectantly, but also a bit uneasily. Jania's short, spiky red hair sticks out like my flames in a cave, her glasses sitting perfectly on the bridge of her nose, and her school uniform tailored perfectly to her slim, studious figure. Marco, standing just beside her, is wearing the same uniform, a black cloak, a black mask to hide our identities, filter the air, and keep our DNA to ourselves, a black bulletproof vest, black cargo pants, black combat boots, and possibly, most importantly at all, our black belts made to hold up supplies such as weapons and potions. His spiky, short silver hair also sticks out, but more like a dove hiding among the owls. His skin is mahogany and slightly transparent to his invisibility. His damn eyes, are completely white, revealing nothing into his soul. How hurry the hell up already? Jania speaks with a hush as she leads the way past the police tape, keeping an eye on all of our surroundings as her glasses glimmer under the high half moon. There's gravel below us, cracking and knocking with each step we take. I stay in the rear, squinting my eyes as the dark, destroyed town materializes around us. Our primary weapons are on our backs, a staff for me. It was a hand-me-down, and one that I'd rather just use as a marshmallow roasting stick and get rid of from my life for good. A DSR-1 for Marco, a weapon that doesn't necessarily suit his rowdy personality, and a compound bow for Genia, her enchanted arrows shining with a faint variety of colors. Let's check out that building first. Jania points to an old western-looking county jail, and we follow her lead. It should at least give us some early reports into all the shit that was caused here. If it all wasn't already destroyed, I mentioned softly, glancing to the shadows and alleys of buildings. I feel as though there are eyes everywhere, as small as the particles in the air, watching me. I hear a groan let out from Marco, and a sigh from Jenny. Let's try to stay positive here, okay, Timber? Don't forget, if there's nothing here, then we'll most likely fail. Yeah, Timber. Quit being a downer and let the actual smart kids do all the work. Marco snarkily chimes in. Says the dude that makes Jania do all of his work for him, in return shows her basic human decency. We step into the dark, destroyed and rampaged mess of a jail. Prison bars are covered in blood. Some appear to be cleanly bitten off, but that's impossible. No one here possessed any form of magic. Jania circles around one of the large, scratched-up desks, similar to the claws of a werewolf, and begins picking at the lock, to no avail. Timber, I need your help. I go to help, and suddenly my face begins to scrunch up, and my airways tighten. My face angles up to the ceiling, and I shut my eyes as I let out a hollering, echoing sneeze, simultaneously releasing sparks and lighting up the dusty floorboards below us. Timber! Jania shouts, rushing over to stomp out the fire and wincing. Marco stands in the corner, eyes wide and mouth gaping with awe. What the hell? Once more, another wrenching sneeze releases, and Jania jumps out of the way. I don't know what's happening. Get out! Jania cries, ushering Marco and I out of the jail as the flames spread. We run out of the building, the ember within me burning brighter as I attempt to hold in my recurring sneezes. It must be the air. Jania anxiously shakes her head. Impossible. Oi, Timber, don't go cooking us all well done, all right? Marco laughs arrogantly. I can't hold it any longer. The sound rings in my ears, my eyes remaining shut as the terrified screams release from my groupmates. The force is so hard that I drop to my knees, soon noticing a bright red on the shut of my eyelids. Slowly, I open them and notice little bits of white glimmer in the air, being illuminated by my fire-clothed body. Slowly, I stand up, gazing around. The entire town is engulfed in a white powder of sorts, millions of white particles. Luckily, the flames slip through my mask. I wouldn't like to think of what would have happened if I had breathed in whatever those chemicals may be. Marco is still dumbfounded. Idiot. But Jania is looking all around at all the specs as well. We need to get out of here and speak to Mr. McIntosh and McZick. Let's walk to the gates and I'll try to fly us back. Yeah, we all agree, and I lead the way, freaked out as the sense of being watched grows more powerful. By the time we've reached the gates, something feels off. I spin around and it's just Marco, staring me up and down with a raised eyebrow. Don't you go roasting me, flame stress. Where's Janie? He turns around and shrugs. Must have found a library. I march past him and he leaps out of the way. I run, faster, over-exhilarating myself and allowing the flames to die down. There are faint marks in the dry, dead plant dirt. Not regular steps like if she were to just turn around and walk away, but long drags, with the imprint below of our boots being lengthened. Wherever she went, she was dragged there, and judging by the constant straight pattern, she was knocked unconscious as well. Passing by all the buildings within the small western town, with a growing flame reaching out of the jail, I eventually find the tracks leading up to a cathedral. The holiness of its past has certainly dissipated long ago. The Christ that was once atop its large oak doors has been rusted, and appears as though it has bleeding eyes and a slit throat, hanging upside down, still leaking some sort of dark liquid. The doors of the cathedral are parted slightly, I glance over my shoulder to see Marco tiredly running to catch up to me. He stops just next to me and waves a few particles out of his face, grunting as they latch onto his clothing. What the hell's gotten into you? He murmurs timidly and flinches at his own deep, echoing voice. That's not a library. Are you blind now? Did you breathe in some of the particles? Just shut up. Turn invisible and pull out your weapon. I order, removing my staff from my back and carefully pushing open the doors, wincing as it creates an eerie creak. After a moment of hesitation, he follows my orders, stepping silently behind me, his presence known to me, but visually non-existent. As my eyes are adjusting to the change in lighting, a putrid, rotten smell leaches into my nostrils, and I gag. I grip the staff tightly in my hands, feeling the smooth, impenetrable wood against my skin. There's a slight dripping coming from the other end of the room. It's not long before Marco lets out a gasp, and that makes me jump. My eyes, finally adjusted, make me question reality. There's Janie, completely naked and hanging from the molded ceiling. Her body is gray as if she's been completely drained of blood. There's a chain with spikes tied around her neck, her skin torn back like a cut on a foam ball. My eyes then lower, where I see the townspeople. The mountain of townspeople below her, almost as though they were zombies, climbing on top of one another for the last brain on earth, their bodies hollow and devoid of life. Marco makes himself visible and points back up to Janie, which makes me notice even more than the first time. All of her organs have been removed. There's a gaping hole in her gut, and even her head appears to be sewed on haphazardly. Her eyes are closed, but judging by the bit of blood on her face, They, too, were taken from her. Janie, her name comes out like a final breath of air. My own body feels hollow, yet heavy and difficult to hold up. Timber, come on, we have to get out of here. Marco grabs me, forcing my body to immediately light up, and he begins to scream. My mask begins to slip somehow, possibly due to all the movement, and I watch as the little white particles whirl their way into my mouth, contaminating my lungs. I let out one last order. Marco, run! And everything goes black. And that is my short story, Particles. I hope you all liked it. Now for one more short story. This one is called Care for the Baby. It was also another writing contest entry. Didn't win for some reason. I actually really enjoyed it. I liked the ending. But anyway, the prompt for it was an old building that's haunted. So let's get into it. The brick is covered in moss and crumbles when touched too harshly. Reminds me of Steven. Hey, I heard that. A high-pitched voice squeaks in the room next to me. And what did I tell you about passively reading people's minds? The dark-haired person next to me pushes their glasses up, the lights attained to them adjusting as they examine the old, dusty, thick books, especially Alex's. Hey, I retort, laughing. Just get back to examining. We need this book, Lennox dismisses us, brushing their finger along the spines. Correction, Steven steps back into the study, holding a fire poker stick for some reason. His long, dirty blonde hair streaming over his shoulders. Leaves, sticks, and dirt still riddled throughout it from when he decided to run straight into the forest because he saw a squirrel that was too big for his liking. It's amazing that the scent of old people and dust in this building still manages to overpower his smug cologne. We needed to get 100, not just in general. I still find it concerning how the teach wanted us to hike through a dark, empty forest and trespass in some old-ass mansion just to find a dusty book, I mention, taking the stick away from Steven. Where did you get this anyway? He shrugs. It was in the bathroom. Did someone use it to plunge their ass? You, Alex! Steven cringes, walking away from me into the large wooden desk on the other side of the room. Papers are spread and piled across the entire thing, coffee-stained files overflowing with documents. Stop reading Alex's mind! Lennox shouts, their voice echoing throughout the building. Don't tell me what to do, Steven pouts, crossing his arms and spinning around in the office chair. We continue searching in silence, Steven checking the drawers, Lennox examining the books, and myself wandering around. Being the most helpful, of course. A breeze brushes my shoulders and I shake, stopping to put on my hoodie. My fingers brush along the side of the sofa. Thick layers of dust and grime leaving a residue on my hands. But then my movement stops and I listen, shutting out the motions of my groupmates. Something doesn't feel right. Alex, I didn't take you for the paranoid type. Steven voices from the room over. Except that's not the room he was in. And I didn't see nor hear him switch rooms. Two floors up, something drops and the soft cry of a baby begins to ring in my ears. Alex, we're busy over here. Can you go see what happened? Lennox's voice asks. Except, just like with Steven, it's not in the right place. I can't use my power. This building does smell like old, yes, but there's also a hint of gasoline. There's no way we can risk an explosion. Rushing back to the study where my groupmates were, the door shuts, slamming on my face. Steven screams, Alex! Steven! Lennox! I cry, banging on the door and twisting on the rusted handle. The knob falls, dropping to the ground with an echoing bang. It rolls over to the staircase, each thud being a pound beating at my growing headache. My body burns, but I breathe and focus on the chilliness of the mansion. Alex, stay calm, Lennox shouts, and the door shakes, followed by Steven grunting. They continue screaming and ramming into the door, but the noises fade. Footsteps coming down the stairs force my ears to twitch, the crying like a melody entrancing my consciousness. My vision begins to tunnel as my body slowly turns, watching as the stairs shake and dust drops from the vibrations. Gray, bare feet catch my sight from the top of the stairs, and hush takes over the mansion. The lights go black, and I give in, no longer caring about the consequences. I hold my hands out in front of me and set them aflame, dully illuminating my surroundings, sparks flashing in the air. My flames may be hot, but my body freezes upon seeing them. My groupmates, bodies gray and eyes lifeless, stand in front of me, faces twisted upwards like pained smiles. As their mouths move, it sounds like as though multiple bones are cracking. With a pneumonia-ridden exhale, they speak in screeches that make my ears bleed. You should have checked on the baby. Next on the agenda, reading Chapter 11 of Death Chill, Chapter 1 of Flame Rip, and Chapter 1 of Arctic Blaze. But before that, I'd like to play you all something my boyfriend had made for me. He loves guitar, often forgetting about me and getting distracted by it whenever we're on a call together. But nonetheless, I still support him and enjoy listening to him play. So, before I read the chapters of my three novels, I'll play a piece by him. So without further ado, Death Chill, Chapter 11.
Death Chill, written by Portia Aubrey, narrated by Portia Aubrey. Chapter 11, An Unplanned Planned Adventure. Screaming. It's so loud. I hear explosions in the distance, and it feels as though my ears are killing themselves. Turning around and seeing Anne burning alive, I try to run to her and help her, but I'm pulled into someone's arms. I look at who's holding me, and it's the Grim Reaper. The hood is covering its face, so I can't see who it is. Blinking, I see a huge grin with giant sharp teeth smile at me. I push him away, and a dog comes out of nowhere. The dog bites the Grim Reaper's arm. A scar and bandages cover the poor canine. It's the exact same dog that I have dreamed of before. The Reaper holds its arms that was bitten, and the dog is now standing in front of me and growling at the Reaper. Its fur might as well be forming a wall. The Grim Reaper turns into sheep, smiling a fuckboy smile. He walks up to me, takes my hands, and says, I'm breaking up with you. I hate you. The dog is whimpering behind me, but he said he loved me. Why would he break up with me? What about everything we've been through? Did it all mean nothing? I look down at our hands, then back at him. His smile turns into a bloody grin. I try to get my hands away from his, but then he pushes me, and I start to fall through the ground. In one layer, I see Lucas freezing to death. In the next layer, I see Samuel with broken nails, covered in blood. In the third layer, I see Destroy getting mauled by demons and ripped to shreds. In the next layer, I see my parents, except it's their funeral. I fall through one more layer and see Hawkeye. She's crying. She's sitting next to a grave surrounded by flames, holding a dog. It looks nothing like the dog I've dreamed of before. This dog looks more demonic. I think she's mentioned something about a dog before. Wasn't its name Demon? Yeah, it was named Demon. She mentioned something about him when we were in the library. She slowly looks up and sees me. She looks skinny and weak. Her eyes go wide in fear, and she points behind me. I hear fingers snap, and both her and Demon explode. I'm grabbed by the waist and flipped around to face whoever was behind me. All I see is a black, bloody smile. Then I wake up.
Lexus, wake up, a voice says as they shake me awake. I wipe my eyes and look at them. It's she. What's he doing here? What time is it? Doesn't he know that this is extremely creepy? Hey, you're safe. I'm here. So many questions, I mumble, squinting at him. Let's go on a little adventure, she smiles at me and walks over to my window. What is this, Peter Pan? Knowing you, you have everything planned out, I add, having difficulty getting out of bed. It's not exactly an adventure if you know exactly where you're going and what exactly is going to happen. Okay, she shrugs. Then I'm going to take you on a little adventure. Can you at least give me a second to wake up or get something to eat? I ask as I put on my shoes. Nah, you'll be fine. She grins happily and takes my hand. We teleport a block away from my house and start going for a walk under the beautiful night sky. She points at some squirrels chasing each other around and at a few Zingubs eating the magic out of a few trees. Why did you do this? I ask as she scares a few foxes away from the baby Zingubs. You were having a nightmare, she mentions as he turns and smiles at me. I want you to be happy, as long as possible. How did you know? I question him uncomfortably. Anne told me, she answers, avoiding eye contact. How did Anne know? I ask with aggravation in my voice. I may have asked her to cast a spell so then she can hear your thoughts even without being around you. She smiles uncomfortably. He looks like he's getting ready for me to freak out. It's pretty funny, and he looks even cuter somehow. What did you find the time to do that? I ask, holding subtle fires in my palms to go against the cold of the night. When you were checking up on the unconscious home invaders, she shrugs, and we start walking again. I stayed up all night to make sure that you'll be okay. What do you mean? I ask, giving him a look of confusion. Anne, you better uncast that spell right now. Also, how are you? Text me what number I'm thinking of right now. I don't have my kinet, but I'll see what it was later. Every girl I've been with ends up having a nightmare, and some require therapy because of some of the stuff they've seen. She throws a rock into the river. I wanted to make sure to get to you quick enough so then you don't see things get worse. I shake my head, laugh, and kiss him on the cheek. What a caring little demon of death you are. He turns all red. He's so cute. I think I made the right choice. We enter more of a city area when she grabs my hand to stop me. Something's wrong. I look up at him to see his face. He looks pissed, scared, curious and confused, yet also protective. She pulls me behind a building before I can say anything. Then I sense it. High amounts of magic energy, yet it's also very weak. I peek around the corner and see a bunch of people dressed in black with a weird emblem on their shoulders. It's a wizard and a human holding hands while standing on top of the earth. I recognize the symbol, but I don't know from where. But I do remember that there are lots of arguments surrounding it. She kneels down in front of me and holds my shoulders really tight. Lexus, I will protect you. Now, then, and always. What's going on? I ask, feeling completely freaked out. Do you know where that symbol is from? She raises an eyebrow. I recognize it, but I can't quite put my finger on it, I respond, trying to look over She's head at them. That's the Ra, I look at him confused. Why don't I remember this? The we are all human? I don't know why, but I barely remember anything. It might be because I'm still waking up, I whisper more timidly now. They're an organization that believes that we should tell non-magic users everything about the world they've been living in, she whispers back. He's extremely panicky for some reason. Recent rumors say that everyone in Ra is actually being mind-controlled and given magic boosters. They say that the leader just wants to see a war start so then they can rule the world or be seen as a god to the non-magic users. Why are you so scared? I ask, growing more and more freaked out. Because of the magic boosters they've been rumored to be taking, she whispers to me. I'm going to see what they're saying. Come on. She, Death may be a power of mine, but dead silent isn't the same thing. I say a little louder, holding onto his hand tightly. I notice a few people look over and start to walk over here. She looks at me and shouts, "Shit, run!" We turn around to run, but there's three guys already surrounding us. She takes my hand, but before we could teleport, they put a fee-hee on each of us. I think we're going to die. She appears pissed. If these bracelets get loose for even a second, they're all dead. One of them takes out their kinet and starts to call someone. "Master, we've captured a blessed one and a demon." Is it that obvious that I got a goddess blessing? I don't think anything about me changed like with she. Shit, I also told Anne to uncast her spell so she can't help us. "Good, bring them in," the voice responds as they take hold of us and teleport to a weird, abandoned building that appears to be a slaughterhouse. "Where are we?" I whisper to she, unable to feel or see him anywhere. "Where's she?" I'm seriously starting to panic. She! "Shut up!" a deep voice yells. A shadowy figure shows up in the corner of my eye. He's holding a soul-infested sword. It doesn't look like animal or monster souls, though. It looks like they're human and innocent. Zero sin souls. Did he kill children? Lexus Deathchill, I presume? There's eerie screaming in another room. Now that my eyes have adjusted, I notice that this isn't a slaughterhouse. It's an abandoned construction site. There are dark clouds drifting back the open walls. How dare they say that you're a blessed one? 15, come here, the figure yells. The guy who called in shows up, and the figure kills him. Blood goes everywhere. Then I see the man's soul before the sword consumes it. It's a tainted, light blue, innocent soul. The soul's a little wild, and I can hear tears coming from it. Whoever this is must have kidnapped 15 when he was just a child. He tainted an innocent child. How dare he? You're not just a blessed one. You're Lexus Deathchill. An explosion goes off in the distance, and I see a bunch of wasps come running in. I need to get this bracelet off of me. I need to find she. But it's not long until about 50 guys come in and kill all the poor creatures. How many people did this guy kidnap? That was odd. The figure looks confused. Now that there's a little light from the fire, I'm able to see the shadowy figure a little more. It pisses me off a little, too, to see that he's literally just a shadowy figure. He's not actually here. "Pussy," I mumble. He teleports in front of me and points his sword straight at my throat. "I can just kill you right now. Take your blessings and your powers. Even you." "How do you know who I am?" I give him a death stare. Except because of this fee-hee, it won't do anything. "Where is she?" "I have connections." He pulls his sword away. "As for your demon boyfriend, he's busy." "What's busy?" I squint at him. "You wouldn't want to know," he asks. "I just realized I never introduced myself." "When?" I snarl. "Like, a few seconds ago?" He looks at me with confusion. "No. When did I ask?" I twitch. He spawns a knife out of thin air and slices me with it. So far his powers are shadows, mind control, and either weapon summoning or item summoning. "Disrespectful child," he snarls. "My name is Anthony Carcasco, and I'm the leader of Ra." "Why are you telling me this?" I glance around. There are people hiding everywhere. He is very highly protected. "Because I want you to know who to worship and serve when you die," he smirks. A cool breeze of the night air sends a chill down my spine. "We must be close to the clouds because it is certainly difficult for me to breathe and even see straight up here. I'd rather worship and serve the trash bag at my school named Rebecca Death Chill Diamond Ship." I snort. He slices my face again. That's when I notice an error in the fee-hee. He's saying something to me, but I'm too focused on finding out what it is. Loose? No. Too tight? Nope. Too thin? I don't think so. What is the error? Anthony is staring at me with an eyebrow raised. I think he just asked me a question. I give him the cold shoulder, and he rolls his eyes. What is it with teenagers and refusing to speak these days? He yells. Good. He didn't notice anything. I feel something touch my wrist. Is it a bug? Or a piece of broken wood? It's hot, and very small. I can't look suspicious, but I need to see what it is. I feel it messing around my fihi. Then I notice a mirror in the corner of the building. Anthony is giving a speech to everyone hidden in the shadows. Does he know that I see them, or would he still do that even if he would look crazy talking to the shadows? I angle my head to see what's behind me in the mirror. It's a baby Wussup. Why is it helping me? Does it know who I am? Does it want me to help its family? I'll do whatever I have to. I quickly look back at Anthony before he notices anything. He smiles at me and says confidently, "So, what did you think about my speech? Will you join me?" You're crazy. A pig. And my hate for you doubles every second I stay here, I sneer. He slashes my face again. Blood is pouring down all over me, and it's starting to become difficult to stay awake. I'll just have to force you. Anthony lifts his hands up to my head. I don't know what will happen first. The fihi coming off, me dying, or Anthony mind controlling me. Only two of those I'm fine with happening, and I'm too weak to move my head away from his hands. I feel myself start to wobble, and everything starts to go black. My head hits the wall, and I'm all wet from the blood. I see three figures smiling at me. Joangsen, the goddess, then two others that I feel like I know very well, but I don't quite remember them. I look down and see the shadow of a dog, feeling as though I could remember this. I turn around and see the Grim Reaper. He's reaching his hand out to me. Then Joangsen comes over to us and pulls his hand away from me, then declares, "It's still not her time yet." One of the other ones put their hand on my shoulder, and the other also pulls back the Reaper's hand. They say nothing, but it just sounds like they say something, but it just sounds like screeching. The Grim Reaper nods and fades to mist. Joangsen turns to me and says, "Lexis, you have to wake up. The world needs you. Everything and everyone needs you." The two others teleport behind her and smile. One tries to say something, but Joangsen interrupts them. "It hasn't unlocked yet. Just be patient." The interrupted one nods, like they're happy, yet also sad. Joangsen continues, "Use your blessings, Lexis. Use them, and save all of us. It's not your time to fall just yet. We believe in you. You've got this." All three of them place a hand on my head and push me. I gasp for breath, and just as I wake up, the fihi is broken. I grab the baby Wussup and put it on my shoulder. Then I get into a spellcasting stance, and Anthony does the same. I can't hold back. Ray Rod Zach Plique Do Rod. Ray Rod Co. Zach Co Actor P Plimo. Rico P Pleedy Yeeps Ak. D Co Tongi. Yeeps K Bo Morth Co D Ray. Tongi Mig Dorp Dorp. Ak Zach Zach Mig Wongi Co. Ray Rod Ak D Ak. Ray Pleedy Yeeps. Ray Rodko. Rico P Ple D Plimo. Reax Ray Rod. Bo Ak Dorb Zak Pleedo. Ray Rodko. Rico Ple D Plimo. Mo Mig Zakko. D Mig D Re Ple Dorp. Ray Rodko. Rico P Ple D Plimo. Zak D Ak Yeeps D Ple. Mo Mig Mig Wo. Mo Ple Mig Wongi Ko. I cast a spell and all three demons surround him. Balrog is burning one side of him. Sindal is giving the other side frostbite. And Thanatos is killing anyone in the room that means harm to me. Luckily, I assigned the word Foiv to that spell now, so I will only have to say the word to cast it. Although it'd be much more powerful if I say the entire thing. I wonder what spell Anthony was casting. I couldn't hear him over my own cast. All three demons send everyone down through a gate on the ground. Then they turn around, salute me, and also go down into the gates. I feel bad for those poor souls. They weren't in their right mind. I need to find someone, or even think of a spell that will help me. I'm still bleeding out, and I'm starting to get dizzy, and everything is turning black again. I need to find help. I need to find she. The end.
Now let's take a quick breather and continue on to Chapter 1 of Flame Rip. Spoiler alert warning. That is Chapter 4. Chapter 1. Anne's point of view. My surroundings are begrimed. My body is insensible. My ability to hear is non-existent. My vision is partially above average. Where is everybody? What happened? The eerie ringing is coming to an end. I am capable of locating some people around me. Samuel is currently crying. What is he thinking? My nails! Samuel yells inside his head. My beautiful nails! Where's my lion? Where's Nemean? A mixture of his appearance and his companion. Understandable. I catch a sight of Brian in my view. He's pushing the rubble off him. Where's Anne? I need to find Anne. He looks over and sees me buried below the rubble and comes running. Anne, good to see he is all right. I grin. Anne, can you move? He asks, pulling the fallen home off of me. Can you hear me? I nod. I'm all right. Where's Orthrus? Right here. Brian directs me to Orthrus, chasing his tail. Looks like he wasn't bothered. Let's go look for everyone else. I instruct and secure Orthrus. I'll look for Lexis. You go help Samuel and Alec. Brian salutes and sprints over to assist Samuel, who is still actively weeping about his nails. The only thing that is leading me towards Lexis is the audio of Cerberus barking and whimpering. I catch a glimpse of her from the corner of my eye. She is patting Cerberus while he attempts to get all the debris off her. What is she thinking? This is all my fault. If only I was never born, Lexis ponders. How dare she consider thoughts as that? I am so vexed at this moment. I hope everyone is okay, although I wouldn't blame them for never talking to me again. Her eyes go wide like she just remembers something. Where's Mom and Dad? They are covering me. Lexis, I'm coming, I yell as I sprint over to her. Don't worry, we'll find them. I look down to Cerberus, who is still scratching rocks off of her. Good boy, Cerberus. Who else has been found? Lexis asks me as I help her up. She grabs hold of Cerberus and hugs him tight. Brian is taking care of Samuel and Alec. I catch her up. Your parents shouldn't be too far away. Anybody out there? Choi's voice calls out for assistance. Dez is crushed, and I think I found Mom. Let's go. Lexis grabs me, and we run over to Troy. Brian, Samuel, and Alec joins us. I found she and Hawkeye a few minutes ago, Alec updates us. They want to go get help. Good job, I reply to him. Help us get Dez out of there and see if you can find Lexis's parents as well. On it. Alec runs to the center of the rubble and summons his angels, as well as directing his shadows throughout the crevices of the debris. He directs us to another section of rock beside Dez. Their father is under there, and their mother is beside him. Are you able to know their condition? I question him. He avoids eye contact with Lexis and Troy. I don't want to say it until we know for sure. Understandable, I agree, and direct Samuel in front of one of the rocks. Change into Sholo or Moiki and help them out. Everyone stand back, Samuel orders us. We all scurry to the other side of the blown-up house, and Samuel changes form. He wraps his hands under the foundation and flips it up into the sky, grabbing Dez, the parents, and joining back with us. The boulder crashing to the ground beyond him. Hold back Lexis and Troy, Samuel requests and sets down Dez and the parents. Dez is fine, but don't say it, Lexis screams, tears rolling down her face. I refuse to believe it. Dez, Troy, revive them. Someone do something. Troy takes hold of Lexis's hand. I've got some bad news for you. What are you talking about? Samuel queries him. Dez disagrees. It's best for us to play the video for her instead. She'll need to wait just a little longer. What video? Roars Lexis. Hawkeye and she teleport in with doctors. Hawkeye explains everything they understand so far. We've taken Lernian, Nemean, and Mishapishu to the vets. They were injured, but they will make a full recovery. We all glance at each other. Where's Lucas? I question. In the hospital, she replies, and catches a glimpse of Lexus's parents. He managed to cover himself with a shield of water, but he's still badly hurt. I read She's mind. What happened to them? They're dead. Poor Lexus. This all happened on her birthday. I have no doubt in my mind that she's blaming herself right now. The doctors cover up Mercedes and Richard, and Haka and she teleport us to the vet. Lexus is refusing to communicate, and I feel as though I should stay out of her head. She is highly likely to be distressed. Hey, Anne? Hakai taps me on the shoulder. Some people from the government may have some details on who did this. If I teleport you, can you please read their minds? I nod in agreement. Let's make this quick, before anyone notices we're gone. We teleport inside of the Office of Magical and Mechanical Violence. Nobody acts as though we are out of the ordinary. We crouch and creep past the sight of everyone and into the more private sector. I peek around the corner and catch a sight of Darren and Daria Munction. I cannot make out what they are saying, but I signal Hawkeye and we tail them. They stop in front of a water fountain, and I decide to read Daria's mind first. I can't believe Anthony Carcasco is still wandering around our city so casually, Daria thinks to herself. He also got that giant bomber. Where did he even get his hands on something like that? Anne, there's your information. Now get out before someone catches you. Daria looks over to me from the corner of her eye. I signal her with a thumbs up and turn to Hawkeye, signaling her to teleport us back. Hawkeye teleports us back to the veterinarian's office. She is still waiting outside for us. Did you tell him about this? I question her. She shakes her head. No, I only told you. So what did you guys find out? She asks us with his arms crossed. They both stare at me and I hesitate to share for a moment. Anthony Carcasco got his hands on a bomber plane. He did this. What was the thumbs up earlier for? Hakai asked me. Daria was purposely telling me the information, I explained. I'm guessing that she saw us following them. So, Anthony did this, huh? Brian walks out from behind a wall. Just wait until Dez finds out about this. We may not be able to calm him down. I actually think Troy will snap far more before Dez. I rebuttal him. He lost his parents, his home, and his girlfriend cheated on him and broke up with him. Seriously? You guys are worried about what Dez and Troy will do? Alex shouts and comes out from one of the shadows below us. Lexus is the most dangerous. Have you even read her mind yet? I nod. I have, when I first found her in the destruction. She's blaming herself for all of this happening. I think we should try to get into contact with Joe Engson, she suggests. Considering what happened during the movie night, I am appalled that he is even willing to think of her name. I'm confident that she is already aware of what has taken place, and is probably preparing to assist Lexus however she can, I assure everyone. We all end the conversation as is, and go back inside of the veterinarian's office. How we are going to break it to her? How will she react? What is Joangson going to do to assist her? The auditory sound of barking and laughter erupts my contemplation. It sounds like Lexus has calmed down a bit and is finally capable of smiling. It also sounds like Cerberus is thriving just fine. I walk into the room she is in, and she is trying to toss a tennis ball, but Cerberus keeps catching it the second it leaves her hand. Cerberus, at least let me throw it. Lexus laughs and goes silent, staring at the ground. Cerberus drops the ball in her lap and lays his head on her shoulder. Lexus starts to cry, wrapping her arms around Cerberus. It seems that her parents put Cerberus through a quick emotional training course. I slowly sit next to her and put my arm around her shoulder. Everything will be all right. You have so many people by your side, willing to help you with anything. She rolls her eyes. That's not what I want to hear, I read her mind. I want my parents back. I want my birthday to go back, to being happy and upbeat. I want to go back to opening gifts and acting embarrassed whenever my parents do something stupid. I want to kill whoever did this. I know, I comfort her. I know. Our pets are shortly discharged. We have been given medication to give our pets for the next week for the trauma. But I know that none of them remember a thing. except for Cerberus. He has faced the most trauma out of any of the other pets, especially since Lexus is the only one of us that has shed tears. We are promptly teleported to the hospital to get our wounds and injuries checked out. Lucas is in bad condition. His breathing and heart rate are unstable, but his injuries are almost completely restored. I wonder what Dez was talking about earlier, about a video. Hey, Anne, Lexus turns to me while the doctor checks her breathing. After I watch whatever video Dez was talking about, please promise that nobody will leave my side. I promise, I smile. She is scared. I do not have to read her mind to know that she is scared. Knowing how she normally thinks, she probably thinks that the videos her parents telling her how much of a disappointment she is. But it is positively not. Her parents loved her. This video is probably just a will. She is probably also concerned as to why they are not supposed to be revived. And I am curious as to why as well. She comes bursting into the room. Guys, what are you done yet? It's time to watch the video. Lexus and I look at each other for a moment, and I smile at her comfortingly. Let's go. We all walk into the dimly lit room with several chairs placed in front of a hologram screen. Lexus and her two brothers sit beside each other, closest to the screen. The lights turn completely off and the video starts. It is a video of her mom and dad sitting on a sofa and smiling at the camera. You can hear baby Dez and Troy and Lexus in the background. I look over at them and they are already crying. Cerberus still has not left her side. Not once. Dez, Troy, Lexus, her mother starts. I love you all. Both I and your father do, and we will always love you. If you're watching this, then we have passed away, her father continues. You are all probably very upset by our choice to not be revived after our death. Baby Troy laughing in the background. We chose to not be revived because this was our time, and we know that we will forever accept our end no matter what happens, her mother explains. Now it is time for you all to spread your wings and conquer anyone who dares to doubt you and your powers. Conquer, our little angels and princess, her father laughs. Conquer past your fears, sadness, doubts, and prove that you are the strongest, most kind, and the smartest out of anyone who dares to come across you. Baby Lexus and baby Troy jump onto their parents' laps. We put Dez in a giant toilet, Lexus babbles. Her parents look at each other with terror. What? The pool, Troy giggles. Lexus, you're so silly. Lexus pulls Troy off the couch and they run out of frame. Both of her parents sit there silent and confused for a few seconds. Can Dez swim yet? Her father asks. No, her mother runs out of frame. We love you, her father panics and struggles to end the video. You'll make it through this and we will always love you guys. The video ends and the light turns back on. I think I heard Lexus laugh for a second when she said they put Dez in a toilet. But now we are all silent. So, we're orphans now, huh? Lexus mumbles to herself. Cerberus starts pawing at her chest. I read her mind. Where are we going to live now? Will I have to drop out of school? How will we eat? None of this would have happened if we had run away or even died that night when I was fighting Anthony. Everyone would have been much happier without me. Samuel runs up and hugs her. Everything will be okay. Darian, Daria, and a detective walk into the room. Daria points to Lexus to ask me if I have told her yet. I shake my head. She prepares a fee-hee behind her pocket. We figured out who caused the event, Darren Munkson said. The detective opens a notepad. The person who bombed your home was Anthony Carcasco. Lexus's eyes go wide. She flies to her feet and I grab onto her. Daria grabs her waist and puts the fee-hee onto her. Darren doing the same to Troy and Dez. The detective hesitates to continue, reading the report. But Darren insists. He has made a lot of progress throughout the last few months. He got his hands on a bomber and is suspected that his army has grown by 50 times. I read Lexus's mind. All of those innocent souls. They're all being corrupted and abused only for the benefit of that villain, Anthony. Anthony, I will kill you, and I will save all of those poor souls. We've prepared a temporary hotel while your home gets rebuilt, Daria adds. Lexus, since you have gotten your powers back, you'll be attending Central Powers High School again. And since you're the one that's supposed to kill Anthony, you'll be given a private gym membership for training. Fire appears on Lexus's shoulder. He looks hyped. They talk for a few seconds, and then he calmly takes his seat on her shoulder. Cerberus is staring at him like he is a fly. Alright, Lexus mumbles. Also, since you all have pets now, you'll be transferred into the Learning with Companions course. Darren adds, effective immediately. This should be fun, she smirks, seeing as how I have a dragon that grows two more heads for every one that's cut off. Hakai smacks him, don't go cutting your dragon now. I won't, don't worry. She rubs his head. Lexus giggles at that. Hey, she, I obtain his attention. Come over here for a second. He does so, and I swat him upside the head. The laugh was not as loud, although. It was still genuine. What was that for? She squawks. Don't worry about it, I beam. His jaw drops. He looks so vexed. What about Hawkeye? Alec raises. Since she doesn't have a pet at all. I notice Hawkeye clench something in her pocket. Since her and she's powers are connected, she will also be transferred into the same class, Daria elucidates. The meeting is soon brought to a halt. All of our contusions and abrasions are completely mended. Everyone else decides to head back home in order to reassure their parents that all is adequate. Yet, I refuse to abandon Lexus's side, so I request Samuel to assure my family that I am unscathed. I will not leave her side, even if she were to bawl or hurl items toward me in an attempt to get rid of me. I will refuse to abandon her. Alright, finally, without further ado, let's read chapter 1 of Arctic Blaze. I just gotta adjust the mic real quick, because it turns out for the beginning portion of that, I was talking into the air because the mic was in a completely different direction. Readjust real quick. Alright, let's find chapter 1 on this book. There we go. Once again, spoiler alert warning. Let's read chapter 1 of Arctic Blaze. Chapter 1, Pain and Questions. I wake up with a pounding headache. I wish that were the only pain I felt, because not even a moment later I'm drowned in excruciating pain. It feels like every single one of my limbs have been torn off and melted back on hundreds of times. My hair feels like millions of mosquitoes and beetles clawing at my head and feasting on my brain. The sounds of my screaming flood the air, nearly making me wish I were death, or even dead, for that matter. There's a mixed taste of blood and sourly bitterness of death, like someone had made a scorching hot soup out of blood and out of the blood of every demon imaginable, and poured every last drop down my throbbing throat. All I can smell is sweat, blood, and death, as I scream until my lungs feel like they're going to explode. My vision is non-existent. I can't even bear to open my eyes as I squirm and shake from the pain flaring up within me. It feels like a volcano of death has just erupted and is reaching up into another universe, escaping my body completely. Lexus! I can't make out whose voice it is. I can barely even hear them over the deafening sounds of my blood-curdling screams. I'm no longer able to move. The pain is still destroying me from within, but I lose the ability to move any of my limbs. My mouth goes numb. It feels like it's falling off, the muscles and nerves tearing with every second of agonizing pain. Don't let it consume you. I'm then reminded of where I am and what I have to do. It's impossible to focus on that letting the blessing destroy me when all I can do is scream and suffer. I just want to die. Please. Please end me now. My eyes start to tear up, and my face begins to soak in the tears caused by the torment. No, I shout over my ears splitting shrieks. I refuse to end this way. I shut my eyes even tighter than before, mentally repeating to myself, I will win. I will win. Everything turns painfully cold, and I lose my ability to speak. The room around me is silent. I can hear the apprehensive breaths and heartbeats of the people around me. It feels as though I'm stuck between two worlds, A freezing cold world, full of pain and secrets, and a terrifying dark world, full of lies and death. Half of me feels calm, yet alone, and the other half feels depressed, but surrounded by loved ones. Both are a painfully alone feeling. I see the silhouette of a man in the freezing cold world. I've never seen him before, and his features are too faint to figure out. I can sense that he's smiling, though. I feel like he's trying to say something, but nothing leaves his mouth. I feel someone, or something, grab my arm on the other side, in the dark, deadly side. I nearly jump at their touch as the pain almost instantly goes away. The other world closes off, and I lose sight of the man entirely. I look around to see she smiling and holding my arm. Cerberus is scratching at my stomach and whining. Looks like you've finally taken control of the blessing. I'm breathing heavily. Every breath, the pain fades further and further into memory. Almost like it wasn't that big of a deal. But it was. It was a painfully big deal. An agonizingly big deal. I switch my gaze from she to the rest of my body as I finally get feeling back in my limbs. A thick layer of death surrounded me from the neck down. Fire's holding Cerberus back so he doesn't touch it. However, something looks off about it. It doesn't look like sap or mist, but dry. Sap and mist can't be dry, especially mist. So what is it then? I stare back at the she, giving him a look, asking for an explanation. He smiles wider. It's smoke. I tilt my head slightly. Your death power can now turn to several different substances. You just need to learn to control it. Something feels different, and I shoot my focus back to my body. It changes something, some sort of sand. With the help of she, I slowly sit up and let the deadly sand seep through my fingers. So many questions, I say in amazement as I play in the blackness. You can ask them while we review the training regiment. Dulio says nervously, and the three of the others walk out, taking Cerberus and Fire with them. She and I are left alone once again. He examines the dust while I continue to play with it like a child. Your voice, I start suddenly, stopping with moving the sand around. She stops and gazes at me, his eyes hypnotizing me for a moment. In my dreams, when it was deep, before you told me to die. Why? She shakes his head. That wasn't me. I gave him a look, telling him to tell me who it was. If you recall, before you had Anthony in your dreams, and his voice was the same way. So you think it was Anthony? There's a chance. His smile fades slightly, and he stares down at the sand. Although, I don't think it was. He doesn't look at my face, but he can tell that I'm confused. I think it was a manifestation of your depression. I gulp and freeze up. What was that guy in that world? Who was he? Is he my depression? Did I create an entire human with my dreams? That's cool, yet terrifying. Especially since it's my depression, not something a little more positive. Like Anne Smart's or Samuel's heart. Why was I taken to your tomb? I quickly switch the subject. I'd rather not talk about my emotions right now. What was with all the fire? It's an important part of my life. Well, my life and Hawkeye's life. He answers. His face lightens up a bit, but his smile doesn't grow. Being taken there is to help grow a connection with the person blessing you. He finally smiles slightly. The fire was always there. I just made it seem darker for dramatic effect. I laugh and punch him in the shoulder. He gazes into my eyes, smiling as he rubs it. But why was the fire there? It's kind of like our soul or spirit, he answers, trying to think of a good way to explain it. If the fire goes out, then Hawkeye and I will die. That's also what Demon helps to defend. I thought that if Demon dies or if the tomb is destroyed, then both of you die. He shakes his head. If one dies, then the other can still live. Like if Demon dies and my casket is perfectly fine, then Hawkeye would die and I'd live. He continues to speak. I notice his face turns sorrowful as he stares back at the sand. If the flames go out, then both of us die, no matter the condition of Demon or my casket. A sudden realization shoots through me. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to. He smiles weakly at me, clearly trying to hold back the tears in his eyes. I can just ask you the rest of the questions later. I don't want to see him like this again. So, I don't want to see him like this again. So desolate. I'll just let all my questions go. Toss them into the wind. I don't want to keep on reminding him of all the negatives. Before she can respond, the death feels like it's changing again. We both take in the death in front of me as it begins to change. My clothes begin to dampen, and my skin soaks some of it up. Water, she mumbles in amazement, his mouth gaping open. You made death water. His amazement turns to shock with a hint of fear. He jumps back, wincing and holding his hand. Did I hurt him? I do a double take from him to the water and back. His face is sour, but then he studies the liquid for a moment longer and becomes proud. You made an element that is a natural enemy to your main element, he grins at me, still holding his hand. You have the chance of getting better at water than Lucas now. His grin turns to a smirk, and he carefully inches closer to me. Did I hurt you? I finally ask, eyeing his hand. He stares at it for a few seconds, then shakes his hand, gazing into my eyes. Nah, I'm fine, he chuckles softly. I'm the one that's blessed you. You can't be stronger than me already. He pats the top of my head, still smiling wholeheartedly, and gazing into my eyes. A tingly feeling occurs nearby my heart. Maybe do a few lifetimes of training and we'll finally be equals. Can you turn your death into water? I ask, not looking away from his gaze and allowing a slight smirk to spread across my face. Let's get to training. His smile grows stronger, and he rushes to his feet. His pleasant scent flows everywhere as he stands up. He grabs my hand and pulls me up. I then realize that my skin has completely absorbed the moisture of the death water. Even my clothes are dry now. I laugh at his avoidance and follow him out of the room. Before we get to the room where Joe Wangson and the others are supposed to be waiting, she looks sidelong at me. He speaks in laughter. I'm surprised that you didn't notice. I glance back at him as we get closer to the room. Notice what? He smirks. Just wait. We turn into the room and then I notice it. Cerberus is huge, even larger than before. How did I not notice that? I could have sworn that he was still small. What in the hell? I stare at the giant, nearly 10-foot-tall puppy, as it runs up to me and starts licking me wildly. I look at everyone in the room. You, Hognehuan, and Joe Wangson burst into laughter. How did I not notice this? I shout as I pet Cerberus. She joins the two others in laughing their asses off. You were in too much pain for your brain to register all of the changes, Dulio answers since he's the only one that can manage an answer. How did he even fit through the door? I glance behind me at the door that can probably reach 7 feet, tops. He crawled through, Doyo answers, easily knowing what my question is. I look around the room, searching for fire. Dulio laughs softly. He's still the same size, don't worry. I notice fire sitting on top of Cerberus. He is a lot stronger now, though. The three others finally stop laughing, and they start wiping their tears from their eyes. She places his arm around my shoulder and smiles with admiration. Ready to start training and test out your new strength? I gaze down to my hands, watching as my veins change from different shades of black. How would everyone react to my new look? I haven't even seen myself in a mirror yet. How much have I actually changed? I scan a vast open field in front of me. What kind of training will I be doing? Will it involve Cerberus? How flammable is this field? I turn my attention back to Shi, tossing all my questions out the window. I nod. Ready. Training after that was taxing. It feels like every muscle in my body was given a lifetime worth of workouts in just 2 hours. At one point, blood even started coming out of almost every hole in my body, even my ears. That was even before we finally started working on death or fire, or any of my powers. That was just a warm-up. Although, I think she almost did it as a joke just so then he can laugh at my suffering. I wouldn't be surprised if it were. Though my body being that sore made it much easier to hold back when we actually started training. He helped me not kill anyone. I managed to master changing my death into several different substances, including solids. I also managed to make millions of tiny mites instead of one huge one. So, I guess that's good. I learned so much in such a short amount of time, and that's only the beginning of my training. I wonder how far ahead me and she really are, and how much he holds back every single day. And those are the sneak peeks into my novels that are only available for purchase now. I hope that you all enjoyed them, once again. My writing portfolio will be available in the description for anyone who would like to check it out. But now for my non-writing things to talk about. One of which being my goals aside from writing. I want to move to Montreal, make a living off my writing. Though of course first I'll have to get an average job. So I'll probably continue working as a line cook, but full-time. And in my free time, I'll be working on my writing. I also want to get my physical health back in order. On days I only have school, I get around 10,000 steps a day. However, on days that I have school and work, I get around 20,000 to 30,000 steps. However, I've noticed that it's still not enough for me to lose weight, which makes sense. Despite how I may look and how much snacks people see me eating every day, my metabolism isn't really all that high. I get just enough steps for my weight to be maintained at a certain level. However, I think I'd be more focused on improving my stamina and strength. That way, if ever someone challenges me to a 1K run, I'll easily be able to last longer than them, even if I'm slower. Good ol' kindergarten style. And based off of the apartments that I've seen in Montreal, there'll also be plenty of parks for me to run through as well. So I shouldn't have much to worry about on that front. Ooh, I also want to get myself a puppy once I move to Montreal. So I've got to make sure I get an apartment that allows animals, which, to my surprise, aren't very many. But enough of goals and puppies. Let's get a bit more serious. Mental health. My journey with this so far. Granted, I'm not going too into it since I want to make it its own episode, but nonetheless, I figured I should still talk about it. Currently, I'm diagnosed with persistent depressive disorder, social anxiety, panic attacks, and paranoia, which, as I had talked about at the beginning of the episode, has led me to having hallucinations. I'm currently medicated, taking antidepressants, and I'm actively working towards thinking more mindfully and attempting to remain calm whenever the slightest thing upsets me or is causing my paranoia to go up. I've had depression my entire life, my first memory even being me wishing I was dead and attempting to off myself. I've had more attempts than I can count throughout my life, though I can say that it's been around 2 or more months since I've last attempted, and with close to 2 months since I've last self-harmed. Not all my scars have healed yet, of course, but luckily they're not as visible anymore. I've always been quick to talk about my mental health and experiences, and this is primarily because I've always wanted to make sure that others are aware that they're not alone. Granted, not everyone sees it that way and instead think that I just want attention or just like hearing myself talk. Which, despite running a podcast, I actually don't. Like, yes, I do enjoy doing presentations in front of class and school, but that's because I like good grades. In reality, I don't like when people pay attention to me, especially when I'm surrounded, since I have PTSD due to that, and being surrounded causes me to have flashbacks. But anyway, I digress. I enjoy podcasting because it's fun, not because I like hearing my own voice, just like how I talk about my mental health, not because I want sympathy, but so then people have someone to relate to. In fact, a few months ago, before I was diagnosed, I wanted to write a play with the main character having borderline personality disorder. I wanted to include all the scary and painful portions of the disorder, while still having the main character be a genuinely good person. I wanted to write about them getting better and with managing themselves and being around others, managing their relationships to avoid becoming toxic, and most importantly, I want them to become successful even with their BPD. That way, it'll paint people with BPD in a positive light, and also give others someone to look up to. But I never got diagnosed with it. I was told there's a possibility I have it, but now that I'm medicated, and can't really be diagnosed with it, since the meds affect my mind already. And since I'm not diagnosed with it, I don't really feel as though it's right for me to write an entire play or novel on it, since there's always a chance that I end up writing someone with a completely different condition than slap the label BPD on it. Through my own research, I have all the symptoms of BPD and genuinely believe that I do have it, but nonetheless, I'm still not diagnosed with it, and so I don't feel it's right to write in the perspective of it. Granted, I do believe that if someone thinks they have a certain mental illness but isn't diagnosed, then they should still get the supports that work for them, because even if they don't have the said condition, then their life will still be more manageable with the supports. But writing or sharing a viewpoint in that perspective is a completely different story. So I guess I could do a ton of research on BPD, then proceed to write a play or story on it, knowing that I've done the research and aren't just projecting what I perceive it as. But I guess I should still tell you why I want to write a play or story on a person with BPD becoming successful and living their dreams. It's because while I was looking into famous people with BPD, I ended up coming across, guess what? The Joker. From the movie The Joker. And from the review I found of it, it is actually seen as an accurate portrayal of people with BPD. That hurt. Especially pre-diagnosis, when I was confident I was going to be diagnosed with it. So instead, I want them to be perceived in a more positive light, especially if it's a main character that truly is a good person, but just had a messed up childhood. But anyway, yeah, mental health. I'll be making a longer episode on it in the future, but for now, there's my update so far, and there'll be more to come. Let's see, next on the agenda is my plans for my future now compared to earlier years. Well, to start off, nothing involving my family. When I was a kid, I wanted to start my own family and not allow my kids anywhere near, near my parents. There's a lot of typos in that one line. Anyway, and that still holds up to this day. So there's no change there. However, a lot had changed in terms of what career path I wished to pursue. At one point, I wanted to have like 16 different jobs, then being every single job my family members would work, and then some things I was interested in. Then I wanted to be in Olympics back in like 5th grade to 7th grade. Then 8th grade, I wanted to be an Olympic runner. Then 9th, I wanted to be a doctor. 10th, I wanted to run a magazine company, but it was a nightmare working with other people. Especially since one Christian man sent me a death threat because I didn't put his word of God on the front page. And also, I'd tell people to not put their phone numbers in the forum, and like 6 people put only their phone numbers, so I had no way of contacting them, and I sure as hell was not going to call them. And just it was all an entire mess. It took me forever to finish the singular fall copy I made because people wouldn't fill out the forum correctly, and literally nobody shared it, even when they said they would. So, oh well. It clearly wasn't meant for me. So then also in 10th grade, well, actually before the start of 10th grade, but anyway, I started my podcast. Granted, I made it as a way to promote my books and grow my social standing, but over time, I grew to genuinely enjoy it. So for 11th grade, I wanted to make a living off my writing and podcasting. Then 12th grade rolled around, now pretty much, I want to make a living off my writing, podcasting, run my own publishing company if I manage to figure everything out, and I want to dabble a bit into journalism as well. Granted, I'm not that good at writing objectively, but not all articles are objective, and besides, what's the harm in trying? But enough of that. Now it's the time for the final thing on our agenda, getting onto the podcast, and how you can do it. I will have a form created and linked in the description of this episode, where you will answer a few questions and then submit. It takes a minute, maybe even less to do. And, well, now with all that done, I believe this episode long enough to finally allow both your ears and my throat up to rest. Check out my novels Death Trail, Flame Rip, and Arctic Blaze on Amazon and Kobo, link in description. Check out the Creative Writing Club Patreon, link in description. Check out the Creative Writing Club Discord server in description. Check out my personal Instagram at dark_night_wolves. And let's bring this ending that I clearly did not write in to a conclusion.